Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I'm your host, John Losliff. Joining me, as always, are my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hello.
And, that's kind of weird.
Three for a loop there?
Yeah, you usually give me some type of weird Kurt Russell
story. I wanted to see what would happen. There was like a silence, so I just wanted to try it out.
Yeah. Dude, when you pause like that, I swear to God, I transported myself into the movie The Thing right before he touches that heated up piece of metal to the petri dish, and then the blood jumps out. Remember, you know what I'm saying? The blood test scene.
I was like, let's try something. Let's experiment.
You know? you just gave me like a Thing nom shock.
Let's live on the edge. You know, yeah. It's dangerous, but the view's great.
John, let me good. You already gave me a Kurt Russell story here. So, way to pull through.
So I guess now I have no excuse to, like, later on say, oh, did we even mention Kurt Russell?
Yeah. Oh, so anyway, I think usually we like to start a podcast off with listener questions, but I think we're doing a little something different today. Lemmigood, care to explain?
That's right. This whole podcast is actually going to be listener questions.
Uh-oh.
You know, every now and then we ask for listener questions on the internet, on Twitter, on Facebook from our coworkers before we do a podcast, just that we'll have a few listener questions. And this time I got just inundated on Facebook by people who regularly listen to our podcast. So this isn't even all of them. We're saving a few of them. But yeah, tonight is all listener questions. And as they turn out, they're biased heavily geographically to the Northeast.
All right. So nothing but listener questions tonight. This could go very well or very, very, very wrong.
Well, you know, the luxury of doing what we're going to do is eight listener questions. The luxury of doing eight is that it's kind of like a horror anthology. Like, when you watch a horror anthology, you could be watching one of the short stories and really not like where it's going. But, you know, it takes you a couple minutes to realize if you like it or not. And by the time you're a couple minutes in, you're like, even if you hate it, you only got like 10 more minutes. And that's it's a new story with a new director.
You know, the horror anthology kind of metaphor seems very appropriate for listener questions.
We're living life on the edge.
Yeah. I'm excited. I don't know about you guys, because I literally have no idea what's going to happen.
We tried this one time, right? And didn't, like, all three of our computers explode?
Yeah.
Yeah, the answers end up all over the place. That's what normally happens with listener questions. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Some people came out with their zaniness, and,
I want someone to take a map of the United States and just, you know, like, you know when you – those movies where they show people like hunting and then there's like all these dots, like there's a tack, 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 and all the strings connecting it. I want someone to do that for this podcast.
Like for listener questions?
Yeah, but I don't know how they would do it. Like just, you know, different characters, like a weird flow chart.
No, you do is you'd plot our listener questions on a weekly cumulative basis that you'd see it spreading, right? Almost like a virus spreading in those government, you know, outbreak movies, except then like we play like we're Hudson and the gang of colonial marines and we're like boo, and you see the dots expand boo, they're in the same room, man.
Game over. You know, Hudson, Bill Paxton, he's like the only guy to have been killed by a Terminator, Alien, and Predator. I think Lance Hendrickson is close, but I don't think he got killed in Aliens, right? did his android get killed?
No, he was torn in half, and he was salvaged, I think. Wait, was he salvaged? I think he was salvaged.
Yeah, and he was killed by – but see, he was killed by a Yeti. Bill Paxton can't say that.
No, not a lot of actors can say they were killed by Yetis.
Three times, Sasquatches. Actually, Sasquatches and Yetis aren't at the same time, but I think Lance Hendrickson's the winner. We didn't even have a competition, and we have a winner.
That could be an entire podcast, like, you know, who's been killed by a Sasquatch or Yeti in movies multiple times.
So is it fair to say your monster's not legit until it's killed Lance Henriksen?
I think so. I mean, like, Lance, yeah. I mean, in Near Dark, he was a vampire. He died. Well, actually, he and Bill Paxton were both in Near Dark, and they both died.
Okay.
So that kind of, like, puts it at a draw.
Right.
I like it.
All right. Well, anyway, before we get sidetracked even more, let's just get going with the listener questions here so we can get sidetracked intentionally.
All right. First question comes from Michael from Rockville, Maryland, and he asks, this wasn't intentional. Michael from Rockville asks, will The Rock get his first Oscar before Leo gets his second?
So in hopes that this podcast doesn't become a bunch of like opinions flying all over the place, I did a bunch of research and there are 22 actors who have gotten multiple Oscars. The gap between them, some win an Oscar, you know, in 94, then they win an Oscar in 95, like Tom Hanks.
I want to pause you just because I didn't get there. Are only in the history of acting 22 actors who have won two Oscars, more than one Oscar.
Well, there are actresses. I just figured actors, since we're doing Leo and The Rock. You know, how often does this happen for men? So 22 men have won multiple Oscars. Most recently, Christoph Waltz, he won twice. So 22 actors. Now, the gap can be 1 year or 30 years. Now, Jack Nicholson had a huge gap between, I think it was Chinatown that came before One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest, but then he won again for As Good as It Gets. So there's like a 1 to 30 year gap. But the average gap between actors winning an Oscar, like winning their first and winning their second, is 8.45 years. So let's just say 8 years between Oscars. That's the average for these 22 actors, with like, you know, 1 year to 30 years separating that. Right. But if you think about it, The Rock, his next films are Baywatch, Fast 8, probably 9 and 10, Big Trouble in Little China remake. He's up for a Jumanji remake. He's going to do Shazam. He has Rampage. They're looking at San Andreas 2, and they're looking at Journey to the Center of the Earth 3 and 4. So that's at least 5 years of movies.
So
now, the thing is,
multiple opportunities to get Oscars.
Yeah. I think The Rock doesn't care, but his next 5 years are pretty much booked. However, Leo coming up has Devil in the White City, and he's reteaming again with Scorsese. And he's going to play like America's first, one of their first documented serial killers. It's an amazing book, Devil in the White City, audible.com. /shark. Yes. And Leo's going to play H.H. Holmes in a Scorsese film written on one of my favorite books. So Leo, let's say he does two movies, he's always getting nominated for Oscars. So the odds, I believe, are in Leo's favor. And also, I don't think The Rock, I think everyone cares about winning an Oscar, but I don't think The Rock necessarily, like, The Rock just, he seems to just make movies he wants. Like, he's not going to get, you know, lie in a puddle and get attacked by a bear in a movie.
He may care one day, but he clearly doesn't care yet.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing great. Audiences love him. Like, he's not, I don't think he needs, like, some actors I feel like need the Oscar. Like, I don't think The Rock needs the Oscar. Like, I think he's already the world champion of the United, you know, like, WWE champ. He's achieved something. Obviously, he wouldn't mind it. If they're like, you know, and the winner for Best Actor is The Rock in Baywatch, he's going to take it. But I don't think he needs it. Yeah. I think Leo needed it. So I think Leo's going to need another one. He's like, he has a fix.
So I actually, Mark, took a similar approach to you. I looked at not so much stats, if you will, like you did, but I just kind of looked at the qualitative data, if you will. And if I was to name every movie that The Rock was ever in where he could even possibly be considered for an award, I'd just come up with Fast Five, and it would be for an MTV award. Like, that's it. That's all that comes to mind. As it turns out, The Rock won a 2001 Teen Choice Award for Best Sleazebag in The Mummy Returns as the Scorpion King. In 2012, he got Best CinemaCon Action Star of the Year. And in 2013, he got the Blimp Award for Best Male Butt Kicker for, of all things, Journey 2. So he's not even getting awards in these award shows we haven't even heard of, if you will, for things that matter. Whereas Leo, The Aviator, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Inception, Wolf of Wall Street, Departed, Basketball Diaries, The Beach, Blood Diamond, Gangs of New York, Catch Me If You Can, J. Edgar, Titanic, Revolutionary Road, Django Unchained. That's like 16 movies, all but two of which were either having him nominated for Best Actor or at least nominated for a Golden Globe. So, like, Leo, he's, like, shotgunning. He's hedging his bets with the numbers game. Like, so, yeah, I got to tell you, especially when you bring up The Rock's next several years of movies, I'm pretty sure Leo's going to get a second before The Rock gets his first.
Yeah, and I just don't think The Rock cares, though. I just think he's like, people love me, and I can make movies, and I can beat up earthquakes, and I can destroy cities. I can be Jack Burton. I don't know. I don't know. What do you got, Lazabeth?
2019. It's the night of the Oscars. What's the name? Natalie Portman announces the nominees for Best Actor. You know, you got Dwayne Johnson, Leonardo DiCaprio, Bryan Cranston, Benedict Cumberbatch. She announces The Rock for his performance in Fast 9.
Right.
As he's going up to the podium, the lights go out, right? And then when the lights come back on, Natalie Portman's been knocked out. You see Leo standing like before, and he's motioning to The Rock, like, come and get me. So The Rock just comes comes rushing to the stage and gives the rock bomb to Leo. And then he does the people's elbow.
Are you sure this isn't the MTV Awards?
No, because this is the Oscars.
This sounds more
this
like.
This is the Oscars.
I mean, if you think about
he's
Mad
standing
Max,
over Leo,
Road.
And then he gives the people's elbow to Leo, and then he goes to the mic, and he says, like, I was like,
do you like pie?
Yeah. Like, he asks the crowd if he smells what The Rock is cooking.
I'll bet The Rock could get an MTV Lifetime Achievement Award, however, before Leo gets his second Oscar.
I think they retired the Lifetime Achievement Award after Clint Howard made that impassioned speech.
That can't be true.
Is that true? They did it back in the 90s. They stopped doing it because he was the last one to get it because they went to Chewbacca. They went to Godzilla. And then Clint Howard was so honored, they haven't done one since.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I guess it's because, like became, like, an adult, and I guess I stopped watching that. Even though of all the things on MTV, that's the one thing I'd want to watch.
So, all right. What could get The Rock nominated?
Well, I'd say Fast 9.
Fast 9. You know what, though? I think you're right, Lazavath, because Vin Diesel said Furious 7 was going to sweep the Oscars, right? Fast 8 is going to sweep half the Oscars, and Fast 9 is going to sweep everything.
Right.
That's it. Wait, so what are we not? I don't mean to challenge trivia knowledge here, but do you happen to know, like, Fast or Furious 7 that got, like, a good number of nominations?
None.
None. Okay, none.
It got the World's Heart nomination.
So far, but that's what Vin Diesel was using to start that analogy, right?
Yeah, but now it's in the back of people's brains. And they're going to get Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu, and he's going to direct Fast 9 in sequence with only natural light, using only cars from the 1970s, and they are going to film in the mountains of Chile, and it is going to become like Fast 9. You know, they're going to rescue some people from an evil dictator. It's going to be like Bullet met Hotel Rwanda met Too Fast, Too Furious meets
As Good as It Gets.
As Good as It Gets.
Yeah. There you go. I'm pretty psyched.
Meryl Streep is going to be in it.
Yeah. Hey, maybe she'll win an Oscar too. She probably will.
I think she's won too.
Yeah, but she hasn't won in like 30 years. Like, right. It's been a long time. Everyone's like, she's always nominated. She's like, yeah, but I haven't won. And everyone's like, yeah, right.
All right, so Meryl Streep wins an Oscar in a future Fast and Furious movie. I think that's the answer to that listener question.
About them rescuing Chilean miners.
Yeah. Well, that was a good question to start things off.
Yeah.
I still have no idea how this episode's going to turn out, but I'm liking it.
Hey, we're on the edge right now. Yeah. You know, there's a couple pebbles going down, like erosion has hit this cliff where we're standing, you know, but we're getting that good picture.
Yeah. It's going good so far.
All right. Second question comes from Buddy from Clementon, Mount Laurel area, New Jersey. He says, what's the most awkward place to have sex in a movie? Examples being the middle of a pack of sleeping Russians at Enemy at the Gates or the bouncy castle in Revenge of the Nerds.
I mean, it's easily the Enemy at the Gates. I know there's more, but the Enemy at the Gates, I mean, that one, I remember watching that movie and going, oh, geez. Like, I get that, you know, whatever. There's nowhere else to go. But you know what, though? There's nowhere else to go, so they made it work. So I'll give them – that's fine. Like, they made it happen. But I guess for me, it's like the back of a Volkswagen in Mallrats, because that's a very uncomfortable place.
Yeah. It's not like a lot of room.
You say that, you know? Mark, because you're 6'4".
No, but it's that joke where Ben Affleck, he keeps taking women. Like, she's like, yeah, we had sex in a very uncomfortable place. And then the big gag was what? The back of a Volkswagen? Like, he was implying something else, but the whole gag was about the back of a Volkswagen.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I thought of Risky Business, the subway sex scene for Tom Cruise, because there were people awake as opposed to Enemy at the Gates where everyone was asleep.
Yeah, but wasn't it like the 80s in New York?
It was 1983 that the movie came out.
Yeah, so like the New York subways, I'm not saying they're always bad. Oh, but like, wrong.
I mean, if you saw that on the New York subway past 11 p.m., it is not necessarily a weird night on the New York subway. But I'm just saying that at the same time, that is that thing that you did see where you were like, yep, that's the New York subway. Like, I thought of Amy Smart and Jason Statham over a mailbox in Crank.
Oh yeah, you know that scene was that those scenes and then the dog track the
dog
the
track,
horse yeah. or dog track.
That was a Crank like, 2, right?
Yeah, Crank 2. So they stepped it up, but yeah, that you know what's those movies like? I get they're supposed to be loud and crude and dumb and full of you know. But watching those scenes, I just felt bad for all the actors. Like, they went for it, but I was like, I don't like this.
I mean, Amy Smart was topless, you know, a decade earlier in Road Trip. I think she's cool with it.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh,
yeah.
Jason Statham, like, that's a dashing man.
I mean, they went for it. Mm-hmm. And then there's Clerks in the bathroom, the necrophilia.
Yeah. Oh. Well, though, to be fair to her, she didn't know he was dead.
Yeah, it's true. Right. That's a weird scene.
You know, and someone said it when we were accumulating the questions on Facebook, someone else brought up Shoot 'Em Up, where Clive Barker and Monica Bellucci are having sex for like 8 minutes while he is shooting people. Like, he's shooting like a dozen people.
Oh, they did that in Drive Angry, too. So Nick Cage stole from Shoot 'Em Up.
Like, yeah, but he was having sex all over the room, like on this table, and then they fall over this lazy boy chair, and then like jump over this piece of furniture while having – like Monica Bellucci would be bruised up like poor thing. I couldn't imagine.
I think she's used to doing rough sex scenes though.
Oh, so, yeah. Compared that to is, yeah. Irreversible.
Oh. Irreversible.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, what about this? When I was 12, I didn't even think about this, but that car in that movie, The Chase, with Charlie Sheen and Christy Swanson, he's on the run from the cops.
Driving?
Yeah, he's driving, and they have a sex scene while he's evading police on a highway.
That strikes me as very distracting.
When I was 12, it's like, oh, wow, I know nothing about driving. I know nothing about, you know, sex, so I was like, whatever. Yeah. But, like, well, I mean, on a police chase, like, that's, there's, like, the steering wheel, you know, like, I mean... That seems like a pretty uncomfortable place.
Yeah.
I cannot find a good way to rationalize this sex scene other than saying like, yeah, when I was 12, it was like head nod. That is awesome. Whereas you see it now, you're like, that's completely impractical.
Yeah.
If I did that with my wife, my girlfriend or whatever, that wouldn't work. It's like, no, we're going to die.
Yeah.
And if we don't die, she'll have a herniated disc and she'll twitch and I'll get stuck and I'll have a cramp. And
yeah, so that's – I think the most uncomfortable scene I've seen was in Greenberg with Ben Stiller and Greta Gerwig. If you've watched the movie, you know what I mean.
What movie was it?
Greenberg.
Yeah.
And there's a really uncomfortable, it's not in an uncomfortable place, but the scene's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't want to explain it.
It's that uncomfortable.
Yeah. I watched it and I was like, ugh.
Okay. So for me, it's, I think the answer's got to be a swimming pool, right? So you think about that scene back in Showgirls.
Oh, gosh.
Where Elizabeth Berkley is like, I think she's having like a stroke or a seizure in the middle of the water or something. She's
like, I think that she was an epileptic and someone turned on a strobe light.
She was like flopping all over the water. And like, I think she's enjoying herself or she could just be faking it.
She had a lot of faith in her director, I'll tell you that.
Paul Verhoeven. That was another thing that was really, really impressive to us maybe when we were teenagers. But when we watch it now, it's like, that doesn't look enjoyable.
It's like... What is she even doing down there? I don't know. She's using all her energy, like in the top part of her body. Think about it. She's using all that energy for the top part of her body. Like, what is she doing down there?
Like, her hip adductors are going to be sore, right? And he's going to, like, herniate a disc or something. I don't know.
Also, Swim Fan, there was a sex scene in that one. That was kind of, I mean, it wasn't as bad as Showgirls, but it still was kind of cringy. I'm just like, ugh. Man,
yeah, it's a Swim Fan.
You're just throwing off like the pH levels that pool. it's getting kind of gross. But yeah, I think swimming pools are usually, it's the most awkward looking sex scenes I've ever seen in movies that are in swimming pools.
Yep.
You know. Oh,
I like it.
Another one I just thought of. We talked about it on an early episode, the movies, films, flicks. The Wolf Cop sex scene.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? I forgot what the name of the character was, but the guy who's like the cop returns to a werewolf. Like, he was a werewolf as he was having sex with a girl, right? I think that's how it went. Yeah, that was really weird.
Yeah, that was
pretty awkward.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking about the other day? You know in the Return of the Living Dead, when the zombies get on the radio? And so these zombies kill everybody. They kill this cop, and the zombie gets on this police radio and goes, send more cops so they can eat the cops. What if Wolf Cop showed up?
Oh, man. Can you imagine a zombie wolf cop?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I mean, humanity survived long enough for there to be a Return of the Living Dead 3, so I'm pretty sure that Wolf Cop showed up and saved the day.
Yeah.
You know, there was the behind-the-scenes stuff that we don't see in the movie plot line.
Yeah, they deleted it.
Oh, man.
Like, when you see Empire Strikes Back... You're not seeing every single member of the Empire get shot down. You're just seeing a little bit, right? So, but in the background, shit like Wolf Cop is going on.
Little don't you know that Wolf Cop was a deleted scene from Empire Strikes Back. He was one of the bounty hunters.
Oh, man.
But he worked for an intergalactic policing thing, and he got a fake invitation as a bounty hunter. And
Wolf Cop Fett.
Yeah, Wolf.
It's hard to say.
Wolf Hunter. There we go.
It is hard to say, isn't it? Wolf Cop Fett.
Yeah, Wolf Cop Fett.
Wolf Cop
Fett. But he got lost. So they deleted it. But Wolf Cop was in Empire Strikes Back.
Okay. Wolf Cop was in Empire Strikes Back. That's the answer to that second question.
That's the answer to the question.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good.
All right. Third question comes from Brett from Clearwater, Florida. Oh, I lied. They're not all Northeast. Comes from Brett from Clearwater, Florida. He asks, who would be the best action film star that would work in a horror movie?
I keep jumping first. Sorry, guys. But I think this is the definitive answer. And, you know, he's passed away, but he was an action star. I think Paul Walker. Because... Paul Walker, I just watched Running Scared recently. Joyride, you know, when I got all the data for 21st Century Horror, people love Joyride. I think Paul Walker was really good at freaking out. He was really good at, like, having, like, a vulnerable side to him. So, like, in the midst of all this craziness with cars and people getting killed and blah, 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 like, he was freaking out. I think Paul Walker is the best. Could, like, if they gave him, like, a legit action film or horror film, I think he'd be great because the dude freaks out like none other. And then also, I think Byung-Hun Lee, he's a South Korean star. He was in The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, G.I. Joe Retaliation. It was in Red 2. He is an action star. And he's in a movie called I Saw the Devil. And I think he's perfect in that. It's like a cat and mouse serial killer thriller. But I think he could pull off action and horror as well. Byung-Hun Lee and Paul Walker. Those are mine.
So this question, like, is it referring to action stars that never been in a horror movie before?
You know, it didn't say that. I chose to answer it that way, but that doesn't necessarily mean
because,
that.
Because, like, you know, you could argue that Predator was kind of a horror slash sci-fi movie. But I'm not gonna say Arnold, because I feel like that's way too obvious. I'm gonna
But either way, Arnold was in End of Days.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, so definitely I'm not going to say Arnold. Too easy.
So for the same reason, yeah, so I was taking it like very the Catholic, like has never but will he. So that I ruled out Arnold. I wanted Arnold, though.
Statham has been in Ghost of Mars.
Oof.
That's another action star.
And like, so Scott Adkins, believe it or not, was in one called Stag Party.
Sly Stallone was in ICU.
Wait, what?
Sly Stallone, he was in ICU, a direct-to-DVD film during his low days.
I never heard of that because, he was my pick!
Yeah, he was in ICU, which is about a serial killer.
If John's Horror Corner hasn't heard of it, it hasn't happened.
Well, during the break, we'll look it up. But yeah, ICU. That's okay, that's his direct-to-DVD. So
I didn't know about that one.
So I was breaking down a lot of action stars, and I'm like, you know, I mean, Bruce Willis was in Sixth Sense.
The Rock was in Doom.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately.
Wait, Laz, you get back to your thing before we keep jumping on.
Okay.
What was your process?
So I'm going with someone who's never been in a horror movie, although he's really good in action movies. I don't think he's ever been in a horror movie. But I'm going with Tony Jaa. I feel like he would be pretty good in like a zombie movie. I know what you're thinking. Like, well, what's the sport in watching him like tee off against a bunch of slow undead people? I'm like, that's where all the fun is. You know,
just see him like totally like put his body in like a suit that couldn't get blood on him, or like he would just be kneeing zombies.
Like, there would just be like hordes of zombies, and they would just like all the humans go like, "Don't worry, we have the guy to take care of him." He just zips up his suit, goes out, and just starts like elbowing people, like his zombies' heads off, and like it would be amazing to watch. And there would be like slow motion kind of cut like slow motion scenes of everything, which would be glorious to watch.
I would feel so bad for the stuntmen because they can't defend themselves. Like, they just have to act like zombies while getting wrecked by Tony Jaa.
Yeah.
And his style is so, like, knee and elbow centric. And they have those, like, slowly degenerating, like, softer skulls.
Oh, gosh.
Do you guys remember in The Protector where, like, he was just going ham in that one warehouse against all the dudes? Like, he was literally breaking bones and joints and everything.
Yeah.
It was just, like, I felt bad for the guys. Like, it looked like they were all just standing in line.
He was going off a Jet Li from Fist of Legend in that.
I think I think you're right. Lasvath, I don't know if this is what you're getting to, but I think he really broke all those stuntmen's arms.
Yeah. I think it would be amazing
snap,
to watch.
Snap, 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 snap.
Yeah. I mean, I know, I get it. Like, you know, it wouldn't be a very scary horror movie, but it would be a very entertaining horror movie.
It'd be like a video game.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
With Hardcore Henry, like, just have Hardcore Jaa.
Oh, man. I feel like I would get, like, sick from watching, like, a first-person, like, view of Tony Jaa.
Like, we could call it Jaa Rule.
Oh.
Murder! It's murder! He would be murdering, again, zombies.
I kind of stopped middle of the road, and I chose Vin Diesel, like, kind of deciding that, like, The Last Witch Hunter was, if I was to, like, be over-analytical, it struck me as more adventure fantasy than horror, even though it has loads of elements of all of them. Right. And so, like, I want him in a what I'll call a straight horror, like, but I want to see, like, the Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers is the killer movie where Vin Diesel is like one of the five victims in the beginning. And he's his job is basically to be like the anti-slasher and slow him down. But every now and then he's injured or he's slowed down or he's preoccupied protecting someone else or in the wrong place. And that's when people die until like at the end, it's him and Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees or something.
And he would just punch Michael Myers' head off in his stage of his career.
Now, okay, in this stage, but if you caught Vin Diesel 10 years ago, he would have been a badass, but he wouldn't have been punching heads off.
Okay, I want Vin Diesel in a movie where he's a teacher, and it's directed by M. Night Shyamalan, and people start killing themselves, and we don't know why. And then he goes on the run with Zoe Deschanel, John Leguizamo, and the guy from Clerks, Brian O'Harlan. And they go on the run, and all this wind is blowing, and they're like, what's happening? And then they go to this old lady's house, and she's like, are you going to kill me? And Vin Diesel's like, no. And then you find out that it was the trees.
All right, listeners who are listening right now, if you backtrack about 10 seconds, when Mark says what's happening, I swear to God, it sounded like he was using a Mark Wahlberg voice.
I was trying. Because she was like, are you going to kill me in the middle of the night? And Mark Wahlberg in The Happening's like, no. So the answer is Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
Well, it's Vin Diesel. It's Vin Diesel in the remake of The Happening.
Ooh.
Because we're in the era of just gratuitously remaking things a few years later.
I would watch it.
Could totally, of course. Well, I'd watch it because
he would. But see, he would be punching the air. Like the air would come blowing at him, and he'd be like, and the air would be like, ugh.
You know the sound that he makes sometimes more in his recent movies than his old ones. Like he has this kind of like it sounds like an ogre from World of Warcraft when he swings something heavy.
I want to watch a movie about how he got so good at drinking Corona the way he does, because that would explode in every – like any other person on this planet, the beer would explode in their face. But Vin Diesel – Dom Toretto, he doesn't move his head. He keeps his head straight. He grabs the neck of the bottle. Like his thumb is on one side, then his four fingers on the other. And he's as high as he can on the beer bottle. He keeps his head in one spot, takes the beer bottle, flips it like it's a V. His head and the bottle make a V while his head's straight, and then he flicks it back down and no beer flies out.
I feel like you'd actually pull a tendon in your fingers. That's actually very heavy for just your fingers from the tip of a bottle. For your fingers to be flipping a full bottle that fast, that's actually very heavy.
Yep.
It's like he's got a prop bottle. That's fine.
He would have tennis elbow.
Real life, you're going to hurt yourself.
He would have tennis elbow from drinking Corona.
Like, he's got to have a stunt hand doing that if it was a real bottle.
Hey, Steve.
Digressing, like, real quick, what is tennis elbow? I've had, like, a lot of people say, like, they've had tennis elbow, but I feel like they don't actually know what tennis elbow is. Is it like...
So, tennis elbow is lateral epicondylitis, And I have, in fact, had medial epicondylitis. Mm. And if you were to hold your hand out in front of you with your palm facing towards your face... Mm-hmm. And trace your forearm down towards your elbow while your hand is still aimed at your face. The outside of your elbow, that's where your lateral epicondyle is. And that is where your tendon is stressed if you have tennis elbow. And if it's the inside, then you have medial epicondylitis and it's golfer's elbow.
So it's not like a pain where it just makes you curse like tennis legend John McEnroe.
You cannot be serious.
You cannot be serious.
It's a tendinopathy.
It's not like hitting your funny bone where it's like, oh, I just hit my tennis elbow. Now I got a curse. You can't be serious.
I thought you were asking for like a technical answer, and so I just went like full on biologist on you.
No, I just wanted to set up.
We should have served you something better. You should have told us beforehand so we could have served it to you, and you could have aced it.
Yeah, that was in.
You know what I'm saying?
That was in. All right, so let's answer that, right?
One day I'm going to hear your impression of John McEnroe delivering a baby.
Oh, it's glorious.
He's my hero.
Which we referenced in the last podcast.
I mean, John McEnroe is an action star, and he was a tennis action star. He could be in a horror movie.
Listen, he was in Mr. Deeds.
If he was in Die Hard, he'd defeat Hans Gruber by throwing a racket at him.
You cannot be serious, Hans Gruber.
You know, he would be a guy who would say, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, he would.
Oh, that's our F word for this episode.
Yeah, anyway. PG-13.
Yeah, I just burned it if I'd known. My bad, guys.
Crap, I had a good setup on the 8th question.
All right.
All right, question 4 comes from Buddy from Clemenson, New Jersey. He asks, what is the best or worst use of a Foley in a fight scene? Now, when I first heard this question, I had to turn to our production guy, Mark, and say, like, Mark, what on earth is a Foley?
Yeah. Oh, so you want me to answer that?
Yeah, yeah, for our listeners, because not everyone knows.
Yeah, all right. So just picture a fight scene, right? And picture Rocky. So you have Rocky, yeah? And Foley is the reproduction of everyday sound effects that are added to film, video, and other media. So they are reproduction of everyday sounds. So in a fight scene, you got to recreate punching, kicking, farting, you know, sneezing. This is a really weird fight scene, by the way. You know, high kicks, low kicks, spin kicks, drop kicks, spin kicks, elbows, spinning elbows, drop elbows. So it's how, you know, they recreate those sounds. So if you think about Rocky, when they're getting hit, pew, 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 or in Kung Fu, whoopsh, whoopsh, or Batman, pow, zap, you know, like, you know, they hit the thing, and pow. I would say the best usage in a fight is in Fight Club. The punches were like David Fincher. I read about this and he almost killed his Foley crew because he wanted the punches to be sickeningly real. So like the level of drama, like I read this, the level of drama in Fight Club varies with each fight. And with most of the duels taking the form of blood sports between friendly combatants as opposed to straightforward slugfest between sworn enemies. As a result, the Foley team had to convey a general feeling of fun and excitement in addition to all the pain. Nevertheless, due to the stylized nature of the movie's more notable fights, their initial quest for audio realism sometimes evolved into audio surrealism. Then they're talking about, I think the chicken carcasses, meat slabs, pig's feet, and so on sound pretty good, says the Foley artist Kleiss. But when we get to the editing stage, David Fincher would hate everything and we would have to start all over again. So they just got killed. And because of that, if you watch the fights in Fight Club, they're able to convey fun, sheer violence, you know, squishy noises. There's so many different sounds for each fight because he wanted all of the fights to sound differently, but he wanted them all to sound realistic. So I think that's the best Foley ever in a fight.
So that's like the sum of Foley.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, like, so I started out just learning for myself what the Foleys were and you know, fighting and not. And I watched this video and I was watching videos about the what do you call them? The sound mixers nowadays?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, the sound mixers who did Apocalypto when there was a chase scene, the guys crawling through like the muck in a swamp and how they did those sounds. And I'm like watching this like, wow, like I really never – like I know that the sound boom is not where these sounds are and that they have to add them later, but you don't really think about how they add them. And so then I watched one about how the Foley artist did this long protracted action chase fight scene in some movie I'd never heard of. But like even though it was some movie I'd never heard of and the scene sucked, I was totally impressed with what the Foley artists were doing to make the sounds of like breaking things, shattering things, running from close to far away or far to, you know, just simple stuff, right? So and then it got me thinking like, well, when they showed me all this stuff, it made me think of elaborate fights where there are all sorts of different kinds of sound effects. Like the Bourne Identity movie series, whenever there are fights in kitchens, offices, bedrooms, or living rooms.
Yeah. I mean,
I rewatched a couple of those and they have all these sounds. And when I watch the fight though, all of a sudden I'm thinking about the sounds of all things. And I'm like, what did he do to make that sound?
Yeah, it's crazy. And like, you know, the newspaper, how they hit people. Like, I mean, it's a nightmare for these guys. Like they sit in these closed studios. They had an MTV sketch about it on the MTV Movie Awards, by the way. But yeah, I mean, but for me, I would say Fight Club. What about you, Laz?
I took a different interpretation to the question. So I have three answers.
Let's hear it.
Oh.
Okay, so the first answer is Mick Foley when he fought Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell match in like 98.
The Hell in a Cell?
When he fought Undertaker in the Hell in a Cell match. For those of you who have never seen it, just YouTube Undertaker, Mankind, Hell in a Cell. You know exactly what I'm talking about. But basically, they end up on top of the cage. The cage is about like 20 feet tall, I think. But it's a high distance. But like,
yeah, he falls 20 feet.
Yeah, at one point in the match, Undertaker literally throws Mick Foley off the side of the cage, and he lands on the announcer's table, like 20 feet below. And like one of the announcers, JR, is like, "By God, King, he's dead. He's dead." It's just
he's
amazing.
Broken in half.
Yeah, it's one of the...
So your use of a Foley was the Undertaker using a Foley as a projectile.
Mick Foley.
Threw across the ring.
Well, it sounded pretty sick when he landed on a table. It was... okay, so the second... my second choice would be the actor Scott Foley.
Can I guess the movie?
No, well, I didn't go with a movie. I saw that he was in the show True Blood. I've never seen the show True Blood, but I noticed vampires and werewolves. I'm like, he might have gotten a fight somewhere in there. So I don't know.
I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, yeah.
So he probably got a squishy noise in his belly and he went, ugh.
Wasn't he also in one of the Scream movies?
Yeah, he was in Scream 4.
Okay.
He was the director.
Right. Okay.
So he was in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream 4.
Well, it's got that crossover appeal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was a fight scene somewhere involved in his career. And
yeah.
Third Foley, I'm going with Dave Foley.
Dave Foley?
Yeah.
From News Radio?
Yeah. I'm looking through his filmography, and nothing really screams fight scenes, but I really...
Wait, wasn't he in Kids in the Hall?
Kids in the Hall, News Radio. I really like News Radio.
There must have been some bitch slapping in the Kids in the Hall, at least.
He was in the movie Postal. There must have been some fight scenes in that.
Oh, yeah, that's Uwe Boll.
Oh, Sky High. I forgot he was in that movie.
Who is he? The janitor?
I don't know.
Was he the bad guy in that?
He was the lunch lady.
Yeah.
Oh, well, he carried trays around and dropped them, and someone had to Foley that noise.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Those are my three picks.
And he was in I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, too.
Was he?
I can't believe the part.
No,
two.
He wasn't.
Okay, I didn't know if you were making that up. Because I don't remember parts two or three of that movie series. I just remember the first one.
Yeah.
Because there's I Know What You Did Last Summer. I Still Know What You Did Last Summer. And I'll never forget, or I'll always know. I'll always know what you did last summer. So there's three of those movies. And I'm just thinking, like, was he? I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, I was just here buying it.
I mean, that's a bold claim. I'll always know. Like, I forgot what I had for dinner yesterday.
Like, but it was just last summer, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was just last summer.
I'll always know what you did last summer. So he's like, following them every summer?
Yeah.
I think they're referring to the same summer. So what it should have been called was I'll always know what you did that summer before the previous sequel.
Ooh, yeah. Or I'll always know.
That sounds like a great answer to the question.
So I actually have a worst answer, and nice. For me, the worst use of a Foley is every single time Bruce Lee ever hit anybody. Because, that's subtle. Every time it sounds like someone is whipping tanned leather, like, like he could have just tapped you and it's.
I think I know how did this get made. They said in Gymkhana they use the same effect all the time. Like, it's the same punch noise for every punch in Gymkhana.
Then it's just like a Bruce Lee movie.
Yeah.
Nice.
So the answer is Jack Black and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Nice.
Oh, wait. Lindsay Lohan was in I Know Who Killed Me. Is that a spinoff of that?
I'll always get goosebumps knowing who killed me last summer.
There we go.
I just mixed all three of them for you.
I like
it. All right, guys. I think now's a good time to take a break. We're going to go watch all the I Know What You Did Last Summer movies, you know, real quick. But
that sounds like just self-loathing.
Well, we did it before, right?
It's horrible.
Yeah, we did it yesterday.
Yeah. We'll do it again. All right, guys, we'll be back.
Hey, podcast listeners. Robert here, along with Kyle.
What's up?
And John.
Hey.
We're here to talk to you about a little podcast that we do called Shark Dropper.
Yeah.
What do we talk about in Shark Dropper?
Oh, all kinds of things. Kyle, name one of them.
Oh, geez. Walking across America.
John, name another.
Ooh, video games.
No, we never talk about that.
Yeah, that's stupid.
So if you want to listen to Shark Dropper, don't listen for the video
games. We talked about video games last week.
You know what? Just don't listen to John at all.
John, just don't listen to him talk.
Okay.
Yeah. that's a good rule of thumb.
But if you want to listen to me and Kyle talk, along with John intermittently, but really don't listen to that part.
Hi, guys.
Go visit sharkdropper.com because you can find everything there.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. All right, guys. So we watched all the... I know what you did last summer movies, and I think it's fair to say that we're kind of exhausted.
Ryan Phillippe's really underrated.
No. It's those cute eyes he's got.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, so get this. ICU, or otherwise called Detox, but it's ICU.
Okay.
It's called Stallone Plays a Cop Who Comes Undone After Witnessing a Brutal Scene on the Job. He checks into a rehab clinic that specializes in treating law enforcement officials. Soon he finds that his fellow patients are being murdered one by one.
Whoa.
It's like Whiteout with Stallone.
What year is this movie?
2002.
2002?
These were his lean days. He went through a direct-to-DVD day.
Wow.
Man.
But the cast in this, Stallone, Charles S. Dutton, Kris Kristofferson, Jeffrey Wright, Tom Berenger, Stephen Lang, like, big cast.
Yeah, actually, Vance, I still like, want to see it.
Robert Patrick, like,
is there a Rotten Tomatoes score for it, or no?
I guess I can look it up right now.
Probably not, yeah.
Probably not.
Probably not.
I see you 2002 Rotten Tomatoes. My computer just blew up.
Okay.
My computer literally just said what? 15%.
Is it like I see you like I see you with my eyes, or is it I see you like an I, a C, and
I,
a U?
EYE.
Mm.
I see you.
Get it?
Or Detox, but it's 15% out of 20 votes.
I never heard of this lunatic movie.
Direct to DVD.
I'll try to find it on YouTube somewhere.
That's right.
All right.
That was back in our undergraduate Blockbuster addict days. So I'm actually surprised I didn't see it.
It was big. Like, it was a Stallone direct-to-DVD. So they pushed it pretty big at Blockbuster.
Man. When did Blockbuster go belly up? Like,
2007?
2007?
I was going to a Blockbuster up until a year ago.
No. There's no way.
Yeah, there's still a Blockbuster in town here, right? Well, right here, right?
I think in smaller towns there's still video stores, but they're slowly going the way of the Buffalo.
There is still a Blockbuster within a few miles of me.
Oh, wow.
So if I have like a membership card to Blockbuster, I could go to that one in your town and it would still work?
Yeah.
And you could get arrested for not returning Freddy Got Fingered.
Okay. Well,
that's right. For like 7 years of defense or whatever.
Remind me to never visit you, Loving Good. Because I wouldn't be able to resist going to that Blockbuster and trying to rent something, I guess.
When you walk in there, would you be like this?
You know, honestly, I would love to walk into a Blockbuster these days. Just the nostalgia factor, like alone, would just be.
And then when they charge you $4.50 for a rental.
Never mind.
So, so Mark, that sound has a name. What's that sound's name?
The Wilhelm Scream.
The Wilhelm
Scream is the product of our next listener.
Oh, yeah.
It comes from Brett in Clearwater, Florida. He asks, what is the best and worst use of the Wilhelm Scream? Now, I wasn't about to go audit all movies in my head or in reality for the best and worst, but I gave it a shot. And I actually watched this video that he linked us to for the Wilhelm Scream, which has like 300 examples of the Wilhelm Scream.
There's 225 movies with that.
So across, like, starting in the 50s?
1951.
And so I watched that, and a couple of my favorites were when Legolas is throwing an orc from the top of that giant elephant monster in Lord of the Rings. And the reason I like that more than, like, almost all the others is because of how high he is, and it's like a second after you get flung, you realize, oh, crap, I'm about to fall all the way down there to the ground, so you have time to think and scream.
Those guys were such dum-dums. Hey, I'm going to jump off the back of my perfectly safe elephant towards the most deadly archer on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, in all fairness, when those orcs were, like, harvested from that, like, pit of muck or whatever, like, I don't think that they had the luxury of, you know, like 12 grades of school and stuff like we did. They just came out and were like handed a sword and they're like, go kill that elf.
But these guys weren't part of that group. They were like some other country and they were like elephant riders. Like, I feel
that's
like,
true.
If, I
that's
feel
true.
Like if your job is to be like on top of an elephant, they aren't going to be like, jump off the elephant if you can.
All right, so can I give some history on the Wilhelm scream?
Please do.
Yeah.
All right. It's been in more than 225 movies and television episodes, beginning in 1951 for the film Distant Drums. The scream is often used when someone is shot, falls from a great height, or is thrown from an explosion. It is most commonly used in film and television. Most likely voiced by actor and singer Sheb Woodley, that's under debate, the sound is named after Private Wilhelm, a character in Charge at Feather River. And so the scene is this guy is going across this river and an arrow goes into his leg and he takes both hands like Ace Ventura and When Nature Calls, the second one. And he like puts both his legs, looks at, he gets an arrow in his leg. He takes both his hands, puts them on the arrow, and then he goes, just like, so like, that's my favorite. It's cause like the guy looks at it and goes, ah! Like just a little arrow. It's a random arrow that goes into his leg. And, like, that's my favorite usage from Private Wilhelm, because that's where it came from.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Back then it was just a scream.
Yeah. Well, like, for the third time they used it, I think after it got used for a while, then they started calling it that. Yeah, at first it was a yell. It was the Wilhelm yelp, and then it was the Wilhelm yell, and then it became the Wilhelm scream.
Like, I feel like to use the Wilhelm scream, there has to be some kind of knowledge of the terror. Like he saw the arrow, then he touched it and it hurt, right? In my case, like the guy got thrown, he knew he was thrown. If you like watch this YouTube video about the Wilhelm scream, a lot of these people, it's like the moment something explodes and they get launched, like the very moment they yell. You wouldn't yell, you just get launched.
Yeah, and guess who gets killed? In a Sasquatch movie while doing the Wilhelm scream.
Did Lance Henriksen do a Wilhelm scream?
Yep. And then I think the worst usage is, so I wrote a post about 30 Days of Night and it did really well on Reddit. And one of the guys, it was about the scene where the vampires initially attack. So 30 Days of Night is about vampires attacking this town in Alaska that has 30 Days of Night. And when the vampires initially attack, they go after the townsfolk, and it's this brutal, bloody fight. But there's this one random scene that throws people out of it a bit, where a vampire throws a guy off a roof, and then the guy goes, wow! And, like, you have all this brutal, bloody stuff, then you have a guy doing the Wilhelm scream. So for me, that's my least favorite, because I feel like it really took it. They did it as a joke, but that scene shouldn't have been jokey. So it kind of, like, takes me out of it.
That's actually the same kind of reason where I pick my worst. My worst was in Indiana Jones Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And Shia LaBeouf is on a motorcycle with Indiana Jones on the back. And they're riding through a library. And they're going towards this, like, you know, some – I guess he's supposed to be a nerd because he's wearing glasses and he's carrying a pile of books. And right before he throws the pile of books and jumps out of the way, he does a Wilhelm scream. Yeah. That is not how you would react. You just, like, throw the pile of books and jump. Like, you would not do that. That is a death curdle, the Wilhelm scream.
So what movie is this?
Indiana Jones 4, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
What movie?
Never heard of it. Are you sure? That was a real movie?
You blocked, you repressed that one, the psychological defense mechanism.
What are you talking about?
It's like, hey guys, remember when Shia LaBeouf was in the Indiana Jones movie? You mean Transformers 18?
Yeah, okay. Transformers, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you're making stuff up now, Lemmy Good. Why would Shia LaBeouf ever be in an Indiana Jones movie? That sounds ridiculous. Okay. Right, so this question was a little hard, so I decided not to really answer it. So I took my own special method, I guess. I decided to come up with some scenes that would have benefited from the Wilhelm scream.
Ooh.
Right. So in Titanic, there's like this quick little shot of like a guy falling to his death, and then on the way, like, he hits like one of the big like propellers or rotors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a little Wilhelm scream, like, ah! Then like he hit.
The sound came after he was chopped up.
No, I think it'd be hilarious if like you heard the Wilhelm scream, he hits it, there's like a thunk. And then like a couple seconds later, it's like,
what about when Ben Stiller gets the Frank above the beans and there's something about Mary?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
That'd be worthy of that.
There's also Hans Gruber like falls to his death in Die Hard 1. You know how you guys remember how it was all slow motion?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the Wilhelm scream would also be in slow motion.
really did fall in slow motion.
Yeah.
So I thought, slow down the Wilhelm scream?
Yeah. Rocky IV, when Rocky finally knocks out Drago, as Drago's falling down, he's like, ugh, but like in a big Dolph Lundgren Swedish accent, pretending to be Russian.
Vodka.
Yeah. So those are my...
the Wilhelm scream.
Yeah. So those are my three... best and worst uses of the Wilhelm scream that don't exist.
Whenever JCVD does a split, when he does a split and he hits the sumo in the balls in Bloodsport.
Wait, did that get a Wilhelm scream?
No, but that'd be perfect. Oh. Or the scene where Ernest backs up his truck into the troll and Ernest scared stupid. The troll gets hit.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the Wilhelm scream. You know what, guys? You know, we're joking around about questions and stuff, but hopefully you learned a little bit of film knowledge and a little bit about... that.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's our goal, is to teach you with these listener questions.
That's right.
And what you're going to learn is going to be most critical with this next listener question. When Buddy from Clementon, New Jersey asks, does Samara from The Ring have a date book with color-coded post-it notes to keep track of everyone she has to kill in exactly 7 days? And does she wear a watch to know exactly what time to get them?
Now, that's a good question, because in a deleted scene of The Ring, it shows the tape sitting on a shelf in a video rental store. So it's safe to assume that someone from the store has rented it. So let's say, like, somehow there's a billion copies, because you have to make a copy and show it to somebody. Let's say that spreads out to about a million people. Mm-hmm. And then, like, she's really busy. Like, that's like she's going to have to get a secretary.
Well, you know, even if there were only 10 copies of the tape.
Yeah, she has to harass 10 people constantly.
Like, I mean, even if she can, let's just say she can magically teleport, right? Like through TV wires and satellites, whatever. But the thing is that when she's killing someone, like from the time that she's, the death scene starts to the time it ends, sometimes you have upwards of 5 minutes, right? From the crawling around and the following them around until they finally kill them. So like, that 5 minutes of overlap, what if it was like the weekend, right? And it's a Friday, it's the weekend, and multiple people watched that tape. Well, now she's got to, you know, bounce around. Like, maybe she has the benefit of time zones to help her, I guess.
Maybe.
I don't know. I tried thinking about it logically. All right, so she...
Uh-oh.
You're not going to say something logical now, are you?
No, something very logical, actually. Okay. So her main purpose in life is to keep track of who watched this tape, right? And like the dates and like the names. And she's also creepy looking and just creeps you out whenever you see her and she acts all weird. She's basically a Blockbuster employee, right?
$2.
I don't know.
The newspaper kid from Better Off Dead.
I want to believe that Samara is like just a Blockbuster employee that never left. Even though her store closed, you know,
still trying to get those videos back.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like she still has somehow still has access to the Blockbuster database.
You know? If you're on an island and you have no technology there, can she still get you?
Ooh, yeah. Like if you get castaway, you mean?
All right. So let's say Tom Hanks, right? He watches a video, goes on this trip, gets stuck on an island.
Yeah.
Like there's no technology there.
Except so is for like,
he is he safe?
But what
imagine
if
imagine surviving all that? Then the day you come back, you're dead.
What if like the VHS washes up on shore with a VCR and a TV?
Oh come on!
And a generator.
But it's just the VCR tape though. It's just
no,
the tape.
No, but everything shows up: the VCR, the TV, a generator, then
what's
oil,
a generator,
and then like and then Randall from Clerk shows up and he just wants to watch videos, and yeah. Tom Hanks is like, no.
If you were stuck on an island that long, you wouldn't be tempted to set all that up to watch the video, even though you knew it was cursed.
What if she said it was Stripes? Like, what if on the VHS, she just wrote Stripes? You're like, okay. Oh, this isn't the video.
Well, in my head, I'm thinking, like, well, there's a 50-50 chance. 50% Stripes or 50% cursed. And I'm going to die 7 days later.
You know, when you're a little kid, when you write a label on something, you also, like, write your name. Like, it's property of Mark.
Yeah.
What if the tape said, Stripes, parentheses, 1981, property of Samara?
You almost got me, you little demon. Then he throws it back in the water. And then a rescue party comes for him, and he's like, no, no.
Well, here's a question.
Like, watch this tape, guys.
What if Tom Hanks didn't watch it?
Wait, what if he let Wilson watch the videotape?
Yeah, what if Wilson watched it? What happens to Wilson?
Wilson's dead.
Hell no.
He gets deflated overnight.
Wilson!
Sorry to jump on your talk there, Lazarus. We had the same thought.
Yeah.
I wouldn't show it to Wilson. I'd show it to Russell.
No. Yeah.
You mean like you have Kurt Russell with you on the island?
No, tennis balls. Like, yeah. No, like what tennis ball? What? Since we're talking about tennis, what were the tennis labels on there?
It was Wilson, Penn. Wilson.
Oh, yeah, Penn. I'd show it to Penn.
Yeah. Not Wilson, Cal Penn.
Yeah.
So basically, if you watch The Ring, go to an island.
But even
castigated.
I think she has Google Calendar in her brain. Like every time the video goes, it goes ding, and then she sets an alarm. But I do think she could get really tired.
Well, doesn't she travel by TV, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's like a DSL traveler.
Well, she messes with water too.
Yeah.
Bathtubs.
I don't know.
That's right. Yeah. She's
a jerk.
It's really not that clear how the rules of her travel. It's almost like Jason. When like someone's running away from Jason, they're like Jason's 20 feet away, and then they start running, and Jason just stands there. And like they look back again from 50 feet away, Jason's still standing in that same spot. And then they go around a corner, and Jason's there.
He's a jumper.
Oh. He is a jumper.
Hayden Christensen is Jason Voorhees.
He and Samara and all them and Freddy, they're all jumpers.
They just yada, yada, yada their skills anyway.
Yeah.
They should have JR narrate The Ring. I want to hear JR in full WWE mode. You know, I'm sorry, guys. We watched a video with The Undertaker and Mick Foley where JR is saying he got broken in half.
Yeah.
I want to hear a JR commentary to The Ring.
But God,
doesn't she break people in half? Like, don't people's faces get frozen and they're all weird positions?
Yeah, they look mutilated somehow, yeah.
She's literally broken in half! I want a commentary. I want wrestling commentary on every movie.
Breaking in half, I thought of Paranormal Activity 3 with Toby and the back break.
Oh, brother. It Follows, the first kill.
Another back-breaking stupid ghost.
Or any movie with, like, a bed that, like, smushes people, like Norberg from Naked Gun.
Or Johnny Depp from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah?
Well, that kind of swallowed him, right?
But he kind of got bent in, like, he was kind of in half. You know what I'm saying? Like, he kind of got folded into himself.
Right.
Yeah, which is what happened at the end of Nightmare 1 when the mother got pulled through the little, like, window door.
Final Destination 5.
Yeah.
Oof. And my uncle in Lurking Fear, but no one else has seen that.
Or, you know what? Oh, never mind. Never mind. It's about me working on a movie. I was a dead peacekeeper in Hunger Games 3, and my buddy put me in a really uncomfortable position to where it made it look like I fell, and, like, my legs were all splayed out, and my neck was crooked. So it looked like I suffered a terrible death.
Yeah.
See, right. Like you were all contorted?
Yeah, and they were all laughing about it because the other guys got to sleep.
I guess the answer, Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, no, go for it.
I guess the answer is Mark was dead in Hunger Games 3. Yeah. That's the answer to that question.
Mark was dead in Hunger Games 3. All right. Our next question actually comes from Buddy's mother, F, in Haddonfield, New Jersey. And she asks, in the future, when no service for cell phone service is not really a thing anymore, and they have power almost everywhere because batteries are going to run on some sort of motion energy in the future, how will directors isolate their characters?
Well, I mean, there have been future, like Alien takes place in the future, and a cell phone wouldn't have mattered. You know what
Very
I mean?
Very true.
Or like, you know, Pandorum, Pitch Black. You know, Purge Anarchy, that makes cell phones unnecessary because you can't call the cops because everything's legal.
True. Yeah, that was a good scenario. And I was going with the space thing, too, because Jason X, Leprechaun 3, Hellraiser 4, all in space. Yeah.
And you're next. They use cell phone jammers and 30 Days of Night. All right, so the only part I don't understand about 30 Days of Night is they steal the cell phones. It's like, why not just kill them? Like, instead of sneaking into somebody's house when they don't notice and taking their cell phone, sneak into their house and kill them.
It's
and then
less...
don't wage a massive, loud attack.
But then we couldn't have the movie.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a lot
I just thought about that. Damn it.
Well, yeah, I mean, so like, yeah, knocked out cell towers, electrical storms, EMP is a little elaborate. Middle of the ocean is a little circumstantial. Foreign country, that's another one.
Oh, yeah.
Castaway. Present day, anyway, foreign country works. Yeah, isolated island, kind of, or literally displaced from your cell phone, because you can be displaced from your cell phone. Like when you wake up in 28 days later, even if cell phones still existed, you woke up in a hospital gown,
yeah,
with half of your head shaved.
Yeah, and like the descent, you know, if you could use the motion energy on it, I guess you could use the flashlight longer, but you couldn't call anybody, so the only benefit of that phone would be to light something. But once you're fighting a crawler, you're dead. You know, what I think is my favorite horror movies are the horror movies where cell phones don't really matter. Like, you make the call, and that person's still probably going to kill you. Like, it's not, like, the action is so dire. You could be on the phone with the cops, and then, you know, the thing's 10 steps behind you.
There's the reality statement that even if you could Facebook, tweet, Instagram, and all that stuff, what's happening to you right now, and even if everybody in your feed got it, from the moment that you think that you're going to die in a horror movie to the time that you die, it's usually about 7 minutes. Yeah. So, yeah, none of it would matter. It would alert people that something's going on, but yeah, just being messy in the movie, it's true.
And Unfriended, they kind of worked around that.
Yeah.
What podcast is that, John?
Oh, my God. Our techno horror. Is that 46?
Oh yeah, Troglodytes on Skype.
Is it 46? Am I right?
I don't. Well, after we'll check in and let people know next podcast.
Yeah.
Don't look, people. We got to find out and give you the answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you know, there's been some pretty boneheaded ones where no service, blah blah blah. You know, 10 Cloverfield Lane. She was in a bunker.
Yeah.
So like, that didn't really. Well, what podcast is that, John?
It was 46, by the way. I just checked for nice. for the Troglodytes. It's 46.
What about 10 Deadpool Lane?
That's like 51. It was right after our 50th. It was 51 because I thought it was going to be our 50th, remember?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's really good ways about it. But for me, like movies like The Descent, I just think my favorite horror films are the one where cell phones don't matter.
That's a good point too, though. You don't have to yada yada it, and you don't have to necessarily isolate them in some clever way. You just circumstantially make it where it doesn't matter. Yep. That's a good point.
Imagine this call. Hey, 911, I need help. Where are you? I'm on the top of Yona Mountain. Okay, give us 2 hours to get up there.
wait, did you just pull the forest?
Well, that movie's terrible. Yona Mountain's up north. The forest is more like the Borest. That is the worst. I'm so happy I was doing things in the background while that movie was on. Oh, my goodness.
That way it would be a complete waste of time.
Oh, brother. Did you see it in the theater?
I did.
How'd you do that?
So I saw it with a colleague on a work trip, and we had nothing else to do at the end of our travel day to get up to North Texas. And so it was just like, whatever, we ate dinner, let's go to a movie, fine. So, like, it was kind of like a wash. Otherwise, we would have just sat in our hotel watching TV. So that was like the rare situation where it wasn't really like a horrible loss to watch the movie The Forest.
Now, I am not for – all right, get this. I don't think cell phones should be in movie theaters, right? But a cell phone could make that forest watching – if you're the only person in the theater and you're watching The Forest and you don't want to leave because you paid for it, the cell phone could really help you because you could just look at other things. You're not asking for help.
Were you guys really surprised by that kind of big hubbub about AMC potentially allowing its customers to text during a movie?
That scared the hell out of me. That can't happen.
But then people got like all mad, you know, obviously. And then AMC was like, oh, no, we're not going to do it. I'm just like, I guess like with the interview of like the new CEO they got, it's like he was like, well, I mean, we're keeping all options open. And that somehow translated into, yeah, we're going to let people text during movies. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he said they were going to do it, but you're right. They said they had all options open, but that would just open the door to just tear. Ugh. It's so selfish. Like, why do you pay good money to go see a movie and you have to look at Facebook?
Yeah, man.
I guess I'm not a millennial.
Listen.
I
got to keep track of how many likes I got on my status update.
Yeah, your burrito.
Mark, I'm with you. I'm with you. If I had, I mean, I don't have kids, but if I had kids and they were being babysat at home, and I just pull out my phone halfway out of my pocket and see I have a text, and I'm worried that it might be the kids, you get up and you walk down the aisle. And you know what else? When you start to walk down that little aisle thing, you know, the entry exit, you are actually in an area where you can look at your phone and see the screen, but other people can't see the screen.
Yeah. Regal's starting to combat it, though. They have, like, layered seatings, like with these recliner seats. So even if someone's texting in the row below you, you don't really see it. Hmm. But that's still – I don't know. I went and saw Zootopia with my wife, and we walked up, and there was, like, an entire like, the movie was on, and there was almost, like, eight people in a row still texting, and it crushed my soul.
Yeah.
I almost went Chris Farley, SNL.
For our listeners, way back in, like, episode 13 when we did Planes, Trains, and Chris Evans, and we talked about me tackling people when someone dips an axe into a fish before they fight. And then we talked about it in a bunch of other episodes after that. AMC Regal, you can hire me and Mark. We will be your tacklers. We will just stand there in the theater for good pay, though. It has to pay more than our regular job. And we will tackle the hell out of people when they start texting during a move.
Yeah, I mean, I was a bouncer forever. I could get some headlocks going.
Mark, you and I used to work at AMC, actually.
Yeah, we did. And we worked with John's cousin, Ryan. We were at AMCs, but no, there weren't cell phones really then, were there? There were cell phones, but they weren't like...
You know, it's like my dad had a cell phone, but my dad was a doctor, and he was the only one I knew who had a cell phone.
Like, I mean, when we were four, like, I guess, Lazbeth, you were there later on, but when I was there, it was like Blair Witch and Deep Blue Sea, and like nobody had phones. Like, maybe people had phones, but no one was really on it. And if they were, you're like, you know,
my dad's cell phone was so big, you wouldn't comfortably put it in a pocket.
Funny. Yeah. Oh, so get this. I was at Gangs of New York. And this is when cell phones really first started popping up into movie theaters. And I remember my buddy Zach Beckler, who made a great horror film called Interior. He and I were sitting there, and that phone, it was like the first like big screened phone. And my buddy was like, dude, that's like a lightsaber. He's like, movies aren't going to be the same. And he said it right then and there in Gangs of New York for that. So he called it Gangs of New York. I blame Scorsese for it.
Wow.
write that down, put it on a piece of paper, and throw it on the floor.
All right.
All right. Last question.
Yeah, we got one more. It comes from Zane from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he asks, how exactly does the concept of gremlins work? And just what after midnight timeline are they going by?
So I sent you guys this link, and it's 8 pages on how stuff works, and it breaks down how exactly they work. So the 3 rules are what? Keep your Mogwai away from bright lights, especially sunlight. Never allow your Mogwai to get wet, and never feed your Mogwai after midnight. Now, can I tell you some little knowledge here? Mogwais don't have nipples, by the way.
Okay.
How do you know? Did someone check?
That's what they said, so I believe them. It's on the internet. Okay. So they said, needless to say, after midnight is a bit vague, especially when you factor in time zones. To be clear, the ingestion of food only triggers gremlin metamorphosis in the hours immediately following solar midnight, the opposite of solar moon. In other words, regardless of what the clock says, it all comes down to the position of the sun in relation to the Mogwai's location. In fact, over the course of a year, solar midnight rarely lines up with clock midnight and depends instead on longitude and season. So the circadian rhythm, I guess, are what they're talking about. But there's a theory.
You mean latitude.
Yeah. So there's a theory about these guys and where they came from and how, you know, maybe the nights are longer, the days are longer. So they might be aliens from another planet and they're not used to the atmosphere here, the light time here on the Earth. So they could be aliens. So some are saying they could be weapons. Some people say they're like kudzu. Some say they're aliens from a drier planet, but they're saying it's more about the solar midnight lining up with the clock midnight. So it's not like different time zones.
First off, I realized I just brain farted. I said latitude because I was thinking because when you go farther north or south from the equator, the days get longer in summer but shorter in winter. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking of that. Longitude, you were right, because the sun's rising in the east. Thing is, though, is that like that doesn't answer the question, because when does after midnight end? And that depends on latitude.
Okay. Well, I think they took a pretty good stab at it. Do you have an answer?
No. I mean, they're, all they're saying is when midnight is. they're not saying when after midnight ends.
I think they're saying maybe when the sun comes up, vaguely, because after midnight's vague. So, I mean, like, there's no real answer to this. I mean, they can eat during the day. So is it dark, like night hours? No, because then that's before midnight. I don't know. Amblin's mysterious. J.J. Abrams taking after him.
Right.
I saw that article. They showed one. It looked like an original piece of artwork, by the way, of a Mogwai attacking a chest burster when they were referencing like they were bioengineered weapons. Yeah. And not like it was so cool because when you think of the weird biology of the Prometheus creatures, when they show that, you're like, this doesn't even. Oh, they're engineered weapons. It's okay for them not to have regular biology. And then you have our cute little gremlins.
And, you know, they do drink liquid too. So that water thing is a little weird. And their sweat, they probably do sweats, and their gooey stuff doesn't affect them. So it's just water.
Yeah.
Do they drink liquids?
Yeah. During the scene, there's guys like chugging stuff. They drink beer. They're at the bar. They're throwing bottles all over the place.
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. And so, why? Yeah, that's holy crap. I didn't even think of that, Mark. Yeah. Why weren't they bubbling?
Exactly.
I mean, beer has got a lot of water content in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very weird timeline. But I like the idea that they're aliens and their bodies have gotten used to, like, maybe a drier planet, you know, with different light hours. And that way, you know, they're not used to what's going on in Earth. And I also like that they're calling them kudzu. And then, I don't know, I think this is interesting. When a Mogwai gorges after midnight, it cocoons itself inside a chrysalis formed from the secreted bile and its own hair. Within this leathery shell, the creature essentially melts. Enzymes break down most of the Mogwai's body down into a rich bath of imaginal cells. Like stem cells, imaginals could differentiate into other cell types, as with the caterpillar's transformation. These cells serve as the building blocks of the organism's new body. What emerges from the chrysalis is, of course, a gremlin. Although the creature retains some of its Mogwai facial and cranial features, plus all of its prior memories, the rest is startlingly different.
So, you know, fun thing, by the way, you mentioned 30 Days a Night earlier, and that's why I meant, like, and I happened to mention the latitudinal component, right, for amount of darkness, if you will, in winter. Well, so there's no such thing as 30 Days of Night in Alaska, by the way, guys, but I mean, there is, like, you know, 20 hours of night, not 30 days of night. But so when that happens, though, you have a longer photo period, or a shorter photo period, and therefore a longer period of relative total darkness. So would that mean that if you had gremlins and you were trapped in North Alaska, Siberia, etc., in the winter, when the nights are super long, like 20 hours, you're put in the situation of, do I starve my Mogwai? Because smaller body creatures have higher metabolisms and can't go as long as you without eating. They literally starve to death instead of you just being hungry for a while. Do you starve your Mogwai to death? Or do you feed them knowing that you're going to have gremlins?
I would not kill my Mogwai.
So you'd feed them and get gremlins. Like, it's a tough situation.
Listen, those gremlins, I'd be like, listen, guys, we're in Alaska. Let's work together. They get it. There's some, like, intelligence to them.
Well, I mean, Gizmo was having kind of taciturn conversations with Zach Galligan. Like, Zach would, like, ask him things, and Gizmo would all but nod.
Yep. But you know what they're saying about Gizmo? Is that he is actually a evolution of the character to make them look cuter, so they're taken into homes so they can spawn gremlins. So he might be evil. Just doing the groundwork. He might be Ben Foster's Harbinger in 30 Days of Night, except he's a little Mogwai.
He's like a Trojan horse.
Yeah. Ooh, a Trojan horse and a cute little body.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then they're saying sunlight melts him because of congenital mutation common to all Mogwai and gremlins.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm a little curious about a greater origin point. So at some point, right, Zach Galligan's dad is overseas for business or something in 1984, right, mm-hmm. buying this gremlin from some old Chinaman. Or maybe he's in Chinatown in New York City. I don't know. But he buys this thing. Now, that Chinese guy was totally willing to sell him this thing. And it doesn't matter if it's for a kid or an adult. You're selling it to a very flawed human, right? Because we're all pretty flawed. We make a lot of mistakes.
Speak for yourself, everybody.
you're selling this very dangerous creature. Like, it's like giving a pet face hugger in an aquarium.
It's like the guy from 12 Monkeys who puts out the thing in the airport. He puts out the dangerous the virus in the airport.
Oh, yeah, it's a container. Yeah.
Like, he causes that in the airport. Like, I bet you this is a jumping off point for world decimation.
But I'm just saying, like, but why was that guy willing to sell it in the first place? So we see where Zach Galligan lives, right? They're not exactly in a McMansion. So it's not like the dad was super wealthy and threw like $50,000 at this old Chinese dude. Like, why was this Chinese guy so willing to hand away with this small tragedy?
How many gremlins has he had to deal with? Like, I would, if I lived in a haunted house, I'd be like, take it. How much you want? $50? Sure. Like, I'm out. Like,
but you just smother the thing out or something, if that was the case.
But he was so cute. I mean, the cute factor allows him to be taken in and allowed to be eventually changed. But I couldn't smother a Mogwai. I couldn't do it.
I mean, I wouldn't want to either. He is cute.
I want that t-shirt. I couldn't smother a Mogwai.
But the Chinese dude knew the rules. He could safely keep it. He gave it to someone.
He wants world destruction. I'm telling you, he wants.
You know, it could be. He could just be a fatalist.
Or he could be a hitman, and that guy, they wanted him dead.
That, you know, that's the fan theory that we haven't been reading enough about.
He's a fatalist.
Why have I not been reading that on Movie Pilot instead of the same 89 versions of some rumor about Hugh Jackman in the next Wolverine movie?
Crap, this pod comes out. I got to write a post.
Oh, yeah. About Hugh Jackman, right?
Yeah, about Hugh Jackman is actually a gremlin.
I don't know, guys. I think for, like, any – on the topic of gremlins, we have to defer to the ultimate authority, the documentary filmmakers Key and Peele. They made a short documentary film.
Yeah,
they made a short documentary film called Gremlins 2. I highly recommend everybody checking that out. I think you'll totally understand how Gremlins works then.
Yeah. Lightning Gremlin. You just said a word.
Mm-hmm. That's going to happen. You're in charge of that. Uh-huh. It's made out of vegetables, like in the face and everything with the peppers and the cute. Yep, mm-hmm. You're doing that.
Okay. None of that is going to be in the movie.
What are you, electric gremlin? That's not even a thing. I love it. I love that skit.
Now it's your thing.
I like that. I think that guy is a hitman.
All right, guys. I think that was it, right? That was the last of the questions.
That was eight listener questions.
I think I can safely say this is our most random episode ever, and that's saying something.
Right? But you know what, though? We want to thank our listeners because you guys send in the questions, and sometimes I hate. You know, I'm not able to use all the questions, and it's not because I don't like them. It's just because we don't have enough time. So I'm glad that we were able to, you know, knock out some questions because you guys are the ones listening to us. So
Sometimes we ask for questions and we don't get them fast enough, and we're a little nervous that we'll have to like make one up ourselves. And when I got all these, I got nervous. I'm like, oh god, I don't know what to do with these. I got four in an hour. Oh crap, I got eight. What do I do? It's like whole pod.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, guys, before we sign off, is there any plugs you want to make?
You know, I just really want to plug the fact that that guy from Gremlins was a hitman.
Yeah.
And he wanted world destruction.
So check out his website. Yeah.
Leon.
Yeah. Just Google it, I guess.
You just Google, like... Gremlins, how gremlins work, you find it.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you for listening. Send in more questions. You know, thank you for listening. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Lamb. The large ass movie blog.
The largest.
That's what I like calling it, too. The large ass
movie. Lamb.com. They are the world's largest, blogger. Collection, I guess.
If movie blogs had Facebook specifically for them, this is what that would be. Right.
That's right. Okay. And so we're part of their network, and thank you, Lamb.
Yeah.
There we go. Not Robert Lamb.
No, definitely not. okay, guys. Well, I think that's it. That's all the listener questions. That's all the plugs. I can't think of anything else to do except sign off for my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer. Yeah, that was close, I guess. Impersonations just aren't our thing on this podcast.
She was only 16.
Yeah, no. John Levengood.
Have a good night, folks.
I've been your host, John Lossel. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
Oh, that was nice.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.